वाणीर्भवति भारत। अध्युत्थानम् अधर्मशः तदात्मानं सृजाम्यहम्। परित्राणाय साधुना विनाशाय च दुष्कृता। धर्म संस्थापनार्थाय शम्भवानि युगे युगे शम्भवानि युगे युगे। हरेर्नाम 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 यज्ञे बलम्। नास्तेव 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 गतिरन्यथा।
Good morning and welcome to our weekly Krishna Consciousness Radio Show. Wishing you a very happy and prosperous day. We invite you all to visit the Hare Krishna Temple, which is at 1229 Coatesville Revived Highway, also known as Highway 28. The prayers there in the temple starts every morning from 4:30 with Mangal Aarti. Then there is Lord Singar Aarti at 7 o'clock and the Darshan is closed from 1 to 4 p.m. after the midday Bhoga Aarti. The Darshan then reopens at 4 p.m. followed by Sandhya Aarti at 7 and the temple closes for the day with the evening Aarti at 9 p.m. Every Sunday, there is a special public program called Sunday Love Feast, which starts with Kirt at 12 o'clock. The midday Aarti of their lordships is held at 12:30 and from 1 o'clock there is a discourse based on Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, after which we practice Japa meditation for a while, followed by Guru Puja of our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and the program ends with a love feast at 2:30. All of you, along with you, family and friends, please come along and visit their lordship Sri Radha Giridhari, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra and Gauri Nitai and get their blessings by listening to their holy teachings and honoring Mahaprasad, and get yourself and your friends blessed.
Benjamin Franklin once said, "Some people die at 25, but they're not buried till they're 75. Agree? Think there's some truth to that statement? Could some of you shout out to me, what do you think might die within us at 25, which means that we're kind of living, but we're not really living? Hope. They say you can live, 30 days without food. You can live a week without water. You can live a few days without sleep, but you can't live for one day without hope. What else may die within us at 25? Curiosity. We stop asking, we stop exploring, we stop searching, developing. What else? Purpose. At 25, we kind of lose our sense of purpose. Life responsibilities kick in, bills start coming through the letterbox. There's another person there, perhaps in your life, with a lot of demands. And then what can happen is we lose our sense of purpose. What else?
Freedom.
Freedom. Okay. Hopefully you've not come with your wife today. Can you say more what you mean by freedom?
Constrained as we get older.
Yeah.
Thank you. Responsible.
More responsibilities, more demands, more expectations. When you're a child and when you grow up as a teenager, life is a lot more carefree. Anything else? Innocence. Wow. Yes, we become so serious, we become so calculative, we become so complicated that sometimes that innocence of just, it's beautiful, isn't it? Just to see kids running and kids playing, just innocence, free. This is something we can ask ourselves in our life. Have we lost some of this? Perhaps we have. Perhaps it's a constant flux. Perhaps it's a question that we could ask. And therefore, Einstein, of course, very, very eminent in the world, who discovered so many things, says in a very famous quote, "Never stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing." It's interesting, when we're kids, kids ask so many questions, don't they? Can you do this? Why? Because of this? Why? Because the way to live. Why? Can you just do it? Oh God. It's amazing, isn't it? Kids are always asking why. But it's interesting, as we grow up, sometimes that tendency to question, to challenge, to explore, to uncover the unknown, to journey into the unknown, that sometimes diminishes more and more and more. They say the most dangerous phrase in the English language is, "We've always done it this way." And therefore, every single day we have the opportunity to venture into the unknown and explore what we may not have already experienced in our life. But if we stop doing that, if we stop questioning, if we stop exploring, then perhaps we stop the purpose of life. How many questions are we asking? That could be a very, very telling introspective exercise. For 1 minute, I want you to just turn to the person next to you and tell them one question in your life that, if you could have answered, you would want this question answered. Go for it. Okay. It's interesting. It's hard, isn't it? Are we questioning? Remember, according to Einstein, questioning is your superpower. If you don't ask questions, you're definitely not going to find answers. And therefore, the more questions you ask, the more answers you find, and perhaps you may find the more purposeful life becomes. In the Vedic teachings, the very, very first aphorism of Vedanta, many of you know that the ancient scriptures of India, they were written in Sanskrit, many, many books of wisdom, and the very, very first aphorism of that body of knowledge, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, in Sanskrit means, now you have the human form of life, you have the ability to ask questions. Anyone want to shout out some of the questions you'd like answered? Why am I here? Do you mean like tonight? Like, hopefully that's not what you mean. Like, what am I doing here? Could have been on the beach, you know. I guess you're meaning more existentially. Why am I here? What else? Is there free will? Do I have the power to design my own destiny? Great question. What else? Is there more beyond this material world? Is there more than matter? Who am I? How can I become conscious? Very good. No one wants to know, like, who am I going to marry? Or something like, you know, how much money am I going to make? Who's going to win the next Melbourne Cup? Pardon me? Does God love me? Why do bad things happen to good people? The idea is, you may think some of these questions, there's no answer to them. And therefore, many people in the world don't even ask these questions because they have this preconception that there's no answer, and therefore there's no point even going down that rabbit hole. But Einstein says, as soon as you begin questioning, and all the sages actually say this, as soon as you begin questioning, then what might happen is your wisdom may begin to accumulate more than you may have imagined. Today, I want to propose to you that there are five questions, and that these are the five most important questions to answer in life. And the reason why these are the five most important questions is because the hypothesis is that if you answer these five questions, you'll be able to answer any other question. In other words, these are the five root questions which help us to then go on and decode the entirety of life. The first question, who am I? The second question, where am I? The third question, why am I here? The fourth question, how long am I here for? And the fifth question, is there something beyond? And if so, what is beyond? Now you may say, some people may say, you can't answer these questions. They're beyond the scope. But let's as a hypothesis say that if we could answer these five questions, I guarantee you any other question in your mind can then be answered. Okay? Later on, you can ask questions about this. Picture this in your mind's eye. I'm going to come back to this in a second, yeah? Look at these five questions and just try and memorize them as best as possible. Today, I'm just going to pivot and I'm going to go to an ancient book of wisdom. Today, I've been mentioning about the wisdom of the East, the Vedas, the Sanskrit literatures. And there's one book within the Vedic body of knowledge which is considered the essence of all of the Vedas. One ancient commentator says that if a forest is compared to the entire Vedas, then there are trees in that forest, and those trees are known as the Shruti scriptures, or the scriptures which came down through oral reception and which contain spiritual knowledge. And on those trees there are many, many flowers, and those flowers are known as the Upanishads. Maybe some of you have heard of these books. And this commentator says, and then if you make a garland of those flowers, then that would be compared to the Bhagavad Gita. And so here you see the scene of a battlefield, and it's explained that 5,000 years ago, a huge war was about to take place. And right at the onset of that war, Krishna and Arjuna were on a chariot. Krishna was the driver and Arjuna was the passenger. He was the warrior. He was the one who everyone had their eyes on, because he was the most capable, he was the most accomplished, he was the most successful and powerful warrior on the entire battlefield. At the beginning of the war, Arjuna began asking questions. Remember, Einstein said, never stop questioning. And so it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Senayor Ubayor Madhye Ratham Stapayame Chuta. You can imagine, it's the MCG, the World Cup final. 100,000 people in the stadium, and the match is about to start. The whistle is about to blow. And then at that point, one of the star players just comes and says, everyone, stop. I don't know. Should I be playing in this game? Can imagine. It was shocking. Arjuna and Krishna went to the middle of the battlefield. They looked around and Arjuna began asking questions. Many of the questions which you asked in the audience today. And specifically, Arjuna was asking questions about happiness, questions about success, questions about purpose, meaning, questions about what he should do with his life. What ensued was a conversation, and this conversation was later on documented as the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad comes from the word Bhagavan, which means God, and Gita means the song. It's a short book, only 700 verses long, and it said that it was recited in about 45 minutes. It's written here, and it was spoken in Sanskrit. This is one of the oldest languages in the world, and it's been rendered into English by the great teacher Bhaktivedanta Swami. And this book is said to contain the blueprint of the universe. In the Bhagavad Gita, five topics are talked about. The first topic that the Bhagavad Gita talks about is the soul. In other words, who we are. What is our real identity? The second topic that the Bhagavad Gita talks about is the world that we're living in. Where are we? What is the nature? This is known as prakriti in Sanskrit. The third topic of the Gita is activity, karma. Why do things happen? The law of action and reaction. The fourth topic of the Gita is time, how time works, what is the effect of time. And the fifth topic of the Bhagavad Gita is divinity, God, and how there is another realm beyond this world. Now, I'll go into these topics in a little while and then we'll open up for questions. But remember, previous to this slide, I was telling you there were five questions. And if we answer those five questions, then we can answer any question. Anyone remember what the first question was? Who am I? And what's the first topic of the Gita? Atman, the soul. Anyone remember the second question? Where am I? And the second topic of the Gita? Prakriti, or the world we're living in. The third question? Why am I even here? The third topic of the Gita is karma. The fourth topic? How long do I have? Kala, time. And the fifth and final question? Is there something beyond? And what's the fifth topic of the Gita? Ishvara, or divinity. This, dear friends, is why the Bhagavad Gita is so powerful. Because what the Bhagavad Gita does is it orientates us into a vision of universal reality. Nowadays, what happens in the world is that when it comes to questions like this, people say, these are the questions you ask at the end of life, when you're old. That's when you start reading spiritual books. Right now, you got to get a job, you got to get money, you got to get married, and then later on, you can ask all these things. When I was 15 and I started reading spiritual books, I grew up, my name was Sandeep. So one of my uncles said, your name is Sandeep, don't go too deep. I said, but my name's Sandeep. He said, don't go too deep. You know, you lose your ambition. You won't be able to achieve anything in this world. Don't read all these religious, people are scared about reading religious books too early if you become too serious. Like there was one young boy and he wanted to spend some time at the temple, at the monastery. So his father was not accepting it. So his father came into the temple and he met the head monk and he said, look, I have no problem with him becoming religious, but let him grow up. Let him get a job. Let him have children. Let his children grow up to his age. And once he's done all of that, he can do this. So the head monk said, okay, forget him, we'll take you instead. And at that moment, he said, no, better you just take him. And I'm like, no, I'm not ready. So it's amazing. People live life, but we don't ask the most fundamental questions first. This is ironic. Would you ever get into a car, turn on the engine, start driving for 2 hours, and then after 2 hours, turn to the person next to you and say, by the way, where are we going? I mean, you would never do that. Start with why. How and what will come later. But you have to start with why. And therefore, Arjuna begins asking these questions, and the answers that Krishna gives helps Arjuna to live in a much, much more purposeful way. The hypothesis of the Bhagavad Gita is that if we don't answer these questions, we may think we're living, but we may just be existing. And so, Krishna then in the verses of the Gita, step by step, goes forward and begins to unpack some of these topics. Identity, who am I? You may say, that's obvious. Of course I know who I am. Really? Look at this quote. I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I'm who I think you think I am. We've become so disconnected from our authenticity. We're surrounded by opinions. We're surrounded by expectations. We're surrounded by traditions and trends. We're told success is this. You got to be this. You got to do this. There's only three options. Doctor, lawyer, failure. And therefore, what's happening is from childhood, we're given so many messages that we live our whole life and then we almost later on think, none of this was me. The very first thing Krishna says in the Gita is you have to understand who you are. And Krishna says you are a unique personality. You have a body and a mind, and everyone has a unique body and a mind. We have unique talents, unique abilities. We don't have to try to copy, compete, or compare with anyone else. You were born an original. Don't die a copy. And so the first thing Krishna says is understand the body and mind that you have and live true to your nature. The worst type of success is when you fulfill all of your goals and then you realize they were somebody else's goals. So Krishna says you have a unique body and mind, the psychophysical nature. Understand that identity. And then Krishna says to Arjuna, remember that you have an identity which even goes beyond that. You are a spiritual being. Even science tells us energy cannot be created or destroyed, but simply transferred. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna shares a spiritual teaching that's shared amongst wisdom traditions around the world, which is that this life is just a chapter. We've existed before and will continue to exist after. Just take a moment to deeply think about that. This life is just a chapter. Death is not a full stop. It's simply a comma. It's simply a gateway into another chapter. These are simple truths. If we understand them deeply, it can shift our entire life paradigm. The second topic that Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita is nature. What is the nature of this world that we're living in? And Krishna gives an incredible explanation. Shakespeare famously said, all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and entrances, and one man, this time, plays many parts. And so this world is actually a stage. It's almost like a theater that all of us have come into, according to the Bhagavad Gita. And we're all playing different roles. In this chapter of existence, some of us are men, some are women, some are rich, some are poorer, some are intelligent, some are hardworking. Everyone has a different personality. This world is just the stage. It's not our true home. And actually, as spiritual beings, we're looking to find our true home because this home doesn't feel natural to us. They did a survey and they asked people, what are the top ways in which you relax? And you want to know what the top four answers were? Go on a holiday, go to sleep, take intoxication, watch a movie. What do all four of those activities have in common? I'll say it again. Go to sleep, go on a holiday, take intoxication, watch a movie. Escape. When you watch a movie, you escape your life. When you go on holiday, you escape your life. Take intoxication, escape your life. Why is everyone trying to escape life? But how long can you watch a movie for? How long can you sleep for? How long does intoxication last? C.S. Lewis said, if I find in myself a desire which no experience of this world can fulfill, I must conclude I was made for another world. And therefore, the Bhagavad Gita opens up the idea that we're not actually meant to be here. It's a bit dramatic there, but yes. Think about that. These are simple insights. They completely shift the way you live life. And maybe they shift us out of existing into really living. The third topic of the Bhagavad Gita answers the question, why am I here in the first place? And Krishna says, we're here because of karma. They say there's a new restaurant in town that's called Karma, but there's no menu. You get what you deserve. Like gravity, karma is so basic, we often don't even notice it. Dear friends, according to the Bhagavad Gita, nothing happens by chance. Every single thing, every single event, experience, emotion, every single individual who's in your life is there for a reason. Everything is meant to teach us something, to take us towards our ultimate happiness. And so, why are we here? Because the law of karma dictates that we need to be in this world to learn certain lessons. And therefore, this world is like a cosmic university, and the lessons are lent out in the form of karmic reactions. And so this is very, very profound. The moment we understand everything happens for a reason, it changes our approach to everything. The spiritualists, when something happens to them, they don't simply ask themselves, how does this make me feel? That's what most people do. But the spiritualist asks, what am I meant to learn from this? Imagine if in every situation, you would ask yourself, what can I learn from this? You'd become very, very wise, very, very quickly. And so karma helps us to understand that everything is purposeful. And time. Time is a very, very interesting energy because time destroys everything. Have you noticed in the world, everything changes. Your health changes, the people around you change, your fortunes change, your hairstyle changes. In time, everything changes. In time, everything is taken away from us. But what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is, it's not that time takes everything away from you. Time takes away everything that's not you. In other words, the force of time will gradually take everything away from us to help us understand who we really are once all the ethereal transitory things fade away. And so time sometimes is very, very painful, but time can also be very, very revealing. And so Steve Jobs said, no one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent. Spiritualists are very much aware of time, and they're very much aware that time is ticking. When we were monks, one morning, one of our teachers came into the class and he said, today we're going to do a guided meditation. Yeah, into that. So today we're going to do a guided meditation that may invoke some emotions. So yeah, let's do it. Today we're going to do a guided meditation on our own funeral. I was like, see you later. No, I think of my funeral. And what he did for the next half an hour is he had all of us visualize our own funeral, the crematorium, visualize who had come there, all your friends, all your family, what their emotions like. And then in that guided meditation, he said, I want you to visualize the person who's coming up to give the eulogy of your life. And that person comes up to the lectern and they begin giving you the eulogy of your life. They grew up here, they went to school here, they did this job. And then they begin talking about your personality, your contribution, about who you were and what kind of effect you left on the world. And then we came out of the meditation and we wrote the whole eulogy speech down. How would we want to be remembered? And then we asked ourselves, what am I doing to become this person? It's amazing. In life, we put so much energy into achievements and things, but people won't remember you for that. And therefore, the monk told us, don't just have a to-do list, have a to-be list. What do you want to be? Maybe that's an important list to create. And so, thinking about death, thinking about our temporary time that we have in this world is actually incredibly empowering. Steve Jobs, in another quote, he says, every day when I wake up, I ask myself,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.